everybody. Welcome to Radio Labyrinth. This is Season 8, Episode 35, and it's just me and Jeff tonight. We've got Tim is up in Pennsylvania. Stephanie is up in Detroit, or in Michigan, and they're going to be back next week. How would you like to be a member of our Patreon? You could get our Patreon shows that come out every week. Our Patreons decide what we talk about and what we watch or what we discuss on our Patreon shows. Get those ideas into us, and we'll be happy to throw them on the next show. We don't have one this week. It's just me and Jeff, but when everybody gets back next week, we'll have a Patreon show as well as a show with everybody on next week. Speaking of our Patreons, if you'd like to be a Patreon member, please go to patreon.com/Tim Andrews and sign up. Now, anybody that signs up, even at the dollar level, all the way up, gets access to the Patreon shows that are available. Let's go ahead and thank our Patreon producers this week. Our Patreon producers are Tim Slayton, Brian and Chelsea Smith, Jeff Peterson, Jim Fortner, Terry Fuller, Chris Chandler, Roby Neely, Kevin Jackson, Mike D, and Matt Carter. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. If you guys would like to be a Patreon producer or patron, just go to patreon.com/Tim Andrews and sign up today. Atlanta Pizza and Euro Halloween party for our radios. That's going to be October 22nd. Still looking at one or two to start in the day. As it gets closer, we'll get a time locked down, but hopefully we're going to record an episode that week at the show. Redbox will be there, come in costume, bring some desserts, and Mike Call and everyone there at Atlanta Pizza and Euro will be providing some great food for us. So it's looking to be a good time, and we want everybody to come out. Tim Edwards is the CEO and co-founder of Codices and a certified Moore streamer. He created the Twitch extension QuizKit, which has been downloaded by over 1 million streamers. And in 2022, he created the Moore platform. And that's what he's here to talk about today. Let's welcome Tim Edwards. I guess first question I wanted to ask, because Jeff has been going on and on about this Moore platform for the last couple of months. And, diving into it, I wanted to give a brief overview of what Moore is.
A few years back, basically, I was watching Twitch. And when you watch Twitch, there's lots of people watching someone play a video game. And you can get hundreds of people or thousands of people are watching one person play a game. And we were why isn't there a game thousands or millions of people could all play at the same time? And they didn't really exist yet. So we started concepting all these crazy different games where you could have a million players, and they were super complex, over complex. And then eventually we sort of refined it down to quizzes and game shows, because we sort of saw that you could have infinite people playing, you could have people hosting and stuff. And we launched a test version of it on Twitch called QuizKit, where people could make their own game shows and quiz shows. And it was called QuizKit, and it did pretty well. So now it's got 3 million players a month as well, which is kind of crazy. And we worked with Amazon Prime and a load of brands to make cool sort of new innovative game shows. But we were sort of stuck on Twitch, which was a bit of a challenge because we weren't able to fully monetize it. And also everyone loves game shows, but I always find Twitch is it's really good and a fun platform, but it's so gamer focused. A lot of people aren't going to go to Twitch to watch game show content, which is quite a different audience. So from that, we decided to build Moore, which is our play of a live stream platform, but specifically for short form, live, interactive game shows where people can play quiz shows. And we have a load of mechanics where you can run different game shows on there, and we run them now. And also there's loads of stuff for other people to play as well. And we're sort of putting it as if you look at TikTok is for short form video, YouTube is for long form, Twitch is for long form gaming. We're going for short form, live, interactive video content. And that is roughly what we focus on.
Nice. Were you inspired by HQ at all?
So HQ Trivia was they were around the same time that we were. So when we were sort of contacting these games, you saw HQ sort of take off. It was back in 2017, which is kind of crazy. And particularly when we made QuizKit, we were why is it so difficult to do this? Why can't anyone make their own HQ Trivia and run it? Well, why is that so hard to do? So originally, our sort of plan was looking at HQ and being how do you make something like that, but anyone can make it, so sort of make the tools and open it up. But yeah, we took a big inspiration from that as well. And in fact, one of the guys, our head of content now at More, was actually the showrunner for HQ Trivia in the UK as well. And I know he ran a few big shows. He ran the one with The Rock that was hosting, because that was filmed out of London, which is kind of cool. And yeah, the UK team is quite big for HQ Trivia as well. But yeah, we definitely, because they sort of popped up, HQ. They're sort of really cool, and it blew up, and then it disappeared. And then there's a lot of copycat apps, but nothing really sort of filled the void. And one of the lessons we sort of looked at it as with HQ was, like, because they grew so quickly, from like a month, they went from like, you know, 20,000 people to like 2 million people playing, and then it shot back down almost so quick. And we think the reality is, like, to make a platform like that, and to make it like long form, like sustainable, you need to have a constant flow of like fresh and unique content and stuff coming through. And the way we see to do that is to have, you know, more creators make content on there as well and share it, open it up a bit. So yeah, it's like, So we sort of talked about HQ, sort of see what they did right and see what we think they did wrong and improved upon. And yeah, a few years of building stuff on Twitch, yeah, it sort of became More in the end.
Now, was this something, as far as your background goes, in deciding to take the More platform solo, is that something that you have a background in, or do you have more of a background in just orchestrating?
It's a good question. So I have like a mixed background. So I started, when I went to university originally, I did like computer science. So I used to be a developer, but then sort of realized that, like, I quite enjoyed making things, but I still wanted to decide what you make, because I got a bit fed up with being told what to make a lot of the time. And I then switched to work for like an indie game studio in sort of like business development, sort of like virtual reality type stuff. So back in, like, we were working on like the old Oculus Rift and like the DK2 and like when the Vive was first coming out. And we were making like high level like concepts stuff for that. So we worked with like AT&T and like a lot of brands to make. It was like, basically, we saw like a thing at conferences where like people would see VR stuff and they'd come over. So I basically just went and pitched all these brands and we're like, oh, you should make a VR experience. Like, people come and check it out. And then we ended up making like a lot of different VR games. So yeah, I spent a lot of time just like working in that space, but I was just basically working with like a team of game designers, and we were like concepting different VR things and then pushing it through and then going back and forth. But then, yeah, while I was doing that, I also used to work for a website called Game Debate, where they're in the same like games office space as us. And I used to run like a weekly live stream, which is like on video game news as well. So I had a bit of a background in Twitch from like streaming on that side. And then I had like a bit of a video games background as well. But yeah, I just play a lot of video games and watch a lot of films and TV and game shows and things. So like it all sort of combined into like what More became, I think, in the end.
What's the goal for More?
It's a good question. You know, I think it comes in sort of two parts. For me, like, I feel like the interactive game stuff is just completely untapped, because you had like HQ Trivia doing like quiz shows. But then you look at stuff at like, you know, America's Got Talent, which is quite big over the last few years. Like, if people could watch and vote in real time and like it actually impact, like, no brainer, people would do it. Or like in the UK now, we have Big Brother coming back. But like, you know, Big Brother was a 24/7 live stream where people could pay for stuff to happen. Like, and there's an interesting thing now, because like I think in TV there's like a huge lack in innovation, mainly because they have to support TV as a format still. Because, you know, with TV, you know, terrestrial television, you have like latency of like 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, depending on where you are based in the country. So it makes it very hard to do like real-time interaction stuff. You can do some of it, but you have to sort of take it into account. So because like the big players in this space aren't really innovating in much, for me it's like just like taking the opportunity down, making like these really cool new sort of games. Like, you can do stuff that people have never done before, and because it's such an untapped format, there's just like endless possibility around it, which I quite enjoy. And yeah, I think, like I was saying before about TikTok, YouTube, Twitch, they've got this, you know, I think when you see a video platform rise, it rises out of a specific niche of like video content, and you don't get a big opportunity really to like tap into something new like that. And we do see like short form interactive video content as like the next, one of the next big pillars, and it's something we're pushing towards as well.
It's really developed like into a community of people, not just on the Discord server, but in the game itself, and just online and on Twitter and social media. All the players seem to have bonded quite a bit. I don't know if that was a byproduct or if that was intentional in the game.
It's really interesting, community building stuff, because we do think about it quite a lot. And we knew from the get-go that it would be quite crucial in order to getting it set up, because what's like Twitch and YouTube's defensibility in terms of like that? And for more, the only thing you really have as a big platform is like the users on there, because like you've got people using it already in culture is the second thing, because technically anything we do, Google, YouTube, Twitch, whatever, anyone can just sort of copy it. But yeah, culture was like a big point for us initially with it, and keeping the community, building a community around it. I think we've been really lucky in the sense of the community we've got, because it has sort of gelled really well. It does fit pretty fit. It's got a nice, like, homey type feel, I think, as well for it. You know, for me, I love watching creators, even on like TikTok, wherever, where they've got like maybe like 20 to like 100 people watching. And I feel when it gets really big, you sort of lose a lot of that intimacy and a lot of what makes like watching creators good, I think. So I think we've been quite lucky for that. But yeah, we've definitely tried to create the community as much as we can. I mean, you do understand that culture's been quite good. It's it's interesting. I was watching like our streams from last year we were doing, and we had like 15 to 30 people watching, and it's like a Halloween stream. And I think I recognize some players, like Crawdad was watching, and like a few other names. But it's just crazy to go. So you go from that like 20 to 30 to like a few hundred now or so. The growth is sort of big, and marketing is always a challenge, because we're always sort of trying to grow, because that's how we can sort of raise more.
Yeah, how many players do you need to be able to start making some money on the app? You need thousands?
Yeah, for us right now, if we can get to like a daily, I think our target now is like 1,000 users a day, it would be really good for us. Because the nice thing about the model is we are like investor backed, so it's quite nice in a sense that monetization is quite forefront now. Unfortunately, like, the whole tech economy seemed to have collapsed like a year ago, and everyone's like, before you could raise money without doing any revenue and just go on users, whereas now everyone's like really revenue focused, which was a bit of a curveball for us, because it sort of threw our investment plans in because we were sort of going off that side of it. But we have really nice investors that kept on backing us as well, which is good. And that was like early March, June this year, where everyone sort of put through, which is good. So they saw the progress of more, because it only came out in November last year, I think, properly out of really closed beta. And getting to like 1,000 people or so would probably be good for revenue. But I think for us, when we did projects on Twitch, even just sort of numbers, frankly, so like we would do like a thing with Amazon Prime Video, and we would do like three game shows with them. We concepted this one game show with Prime Video the Premier League, which is for like soccer and like football. And it was quite cool, because it was like one streamer and his audience versus another streamer and their audience. And basically the audience would decide what they think the answer is, and the streamer would decide whether to go with them or against them based on what they think. And it's quite cool, because there's like a lot of Jeopardy moments where like one of them would go, they'd go with the audience or against them, they get it wrong and right. And for that, like, I'm pretty sure the streamers got paid about 15 grand for like three, like an hour long streams basically each. So, Grammar's paying like 30 grand for that. So, if we can get 3,000 to 5,000, and then they had like 3,000 to 5,000 people watching. So, I think as long as you can get up the numbers, even when we look at like influencer and like how much people are paying influencers for stuff. And what we found as well with more actually is that a lot of the, like, we've done like two or three brand things now, and they've actually come back to us, and they want to do more, because I think like when we do sponsor things, it's not just like, oh, buy this product kind of thing. It's sort of, but we do like a question about it. We're like sort of trying it, demoing it on the stream as well, which is good. I'm like giving people prizes, or like giving out vouchers for things, which like when you win it, I think it's like fun to spend, and it's like, it's better to look at stuff. And we also give out like huge crates of products as well, which is quite nice. But yeah, I think, we're quite careful about who we pick as well, but it definitely feels like, once we get those numbers up, I think then the brand start growing, it could come sustainable quite quickly. But yeah, so it's almost like right now, although it was working with the brands as well, because we can sort of see the models and stuff works, it's just getting those numbers up. Because once you have the numbers, it sort of gets easier for that part, and then other parts get harder. But yeah, that's the, yeah.
And does it seem like it's growing on a daily or weekly basis?
We are growing on a weekly basis. It's quite a challenge to communicate. So we've just I know we did a load of surveys recently. We've just like underdone a load of research to find out sort of like who people are, what kind of words people respond to the best in terms of what they do. I think we gave out a lot of surveys and things, because part of it is like communicating more as a product, So like, you know, we're not, you know, we're not like HQ Trivia where we just like one show is an app. We're like an app with like HQ Trivia and then like other streams and things and stuff like that. And communicating that has been, it's been a challenge sort of from day one, really, when you're launching like a platform like that and you've got such a split focus of like different things, it can be quite hard to make it concise. So yeah, we're trying to, we've been working on the messaging a bit now to try and get.
And that's one of the great things about the More platform too, is that anybody can jump on there and create a show. Like if you have an idea for a show, it doesn't have to be a game show. You can just come on and do whatever. There's all sorts of crazy shows on there where people don't even ask trivia questions. They just talk about stuff or just put up random questions where the answer is always the same or whatever.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Well, was that part of, I mean, like any new startup, like when you had YouTube started out as being pretty much a memory, you know, a memory locker that turned into what it is today, is the More platform set up with that much open-ended on the front end so that it can organically grow into what you haven't decided yet or what you haven't even thought of?
It's a really good question, and it's one we discuss a lot in terms of like how we position it. Because like, yeah, because like initially right now, like our biggest show is like More Trivia, which is like a single show app. And it's like, well, if you wanted to make a trivia show app, we'd just make it a trivia show app and launch that. And then, you know, it wouldn't make sense to have all the other stuff on. We'd then launch another app if you wanted to another show and another app to another show. And that's sort of what, that's sort of what we decided against. In terms of our identity, you know, it's been a challenge. We sort of make, you know, we had a big discussion recently. It's like, well, what do we do? Do we focus on just the trivia side like that? And, or do we focus on helping people make more shows? Because you feel like if you focus on both, then it just becomes too diluted and we're trying to sort of do both. So we have, we take a big push to really, because the reality is, well, like, you know, if you need fresh new content, we can sort of make it all the time. But right now, it's not super sustainable for us to do just because of the amount of stuff we need. And, you know, once you have lots of other people making stuff on there, you know, it just feels nicer. It gets to like, there's a classic problem called like the cold start problem, basically, where when you build a platform, you've got like two sides. You've got like creators and you've got viewers, and you need viewers to watch the creators, but also you need creators on there or no one's going to come and watch anything. And you need both of them sort of at the same time. So our solution initially for that was, right, well, we'll make the content. So we'll fill the creator side. We'll build up the viewer side. And as viewers build up, we'll get more creators in to watch those viewers. To watch it, and then slowly it would like transition from maybe our shows being the biggest to like lots of different shows as well.
Yeah, it's wide open to where somebody with like millions of followers could come on and do a show and just blow the thing up and make it go viral like overnight.
Yeah, that's what we're really pushing towards now. I think the really fun thing I love about More now, and we're sort of changing up a bit, is like if you're a new creator, like you're going to see them on Twitch or YouTube, whatever, you're going to get like two or three people watching you, or like barely anything. But if you come on More, like new creators will get like 30, 40 people like watching you from like day one, which is a really good proposition for new creators as well. It sort of just shows the power of the community. We're actually working on our sort of next big feature now, so right now we've got like the homepage, which is like an export page where you can see the show scheduling. But what we really want to do is just get people into content right away. So we're turning the homepage into a thing called Main Stage, basically, where it's like a single stream. It's on 24/7. Anyone can chat in there. So like once you log on to More, if you see there's like no one streaming, then anyone can go in, they can start streaming right away, and you have like a ready baked in audience there. And you can also see the countdown to when people are coming through. And we're actually going to restrict it to one show running at a time. So there's like, so you can schedule and you can block stuff off as well. So the next sort of phase of the app now is sort of turning it into like this new interactive live community driven like TV channel where you have to sort of reserve slots and people can watch stuff and it's 24/7, anyone can create and things, which sort of like the next phase of the app, which we're quite excited for as well, and interesting to see how that pans out as well.
Now I have an idea for a show, but I gotta figure out how to do it. I've never been on Twitch, so I don't know how to do the OBS thing.
OBS is a bit of a challenge, yeah. If you let us know, though, we can happy to help. It always, do shows.
Yeah, I need a little tutorial, but...
just out of curiosity, what do your parents, how do they describe what you do?
I don't even know if they know, really. I think they do get it more now. They never really got it. So what I was explaining to people is like, it was like a game show. Everyone plays along. They didn't really get it. But now I think they do actually both play every now and again. So they do sort of understand it. But like the last clue, like, how do you make money? Quite a lot and things like that as well. But yeah, I try and explain to people where it's like, you know, if you're watching TV, the one thing you want to do when you're watching a game show is play along. So what more is, it's like, rather than having guests on the show, everyone watching can play in real time on their phones. And then people sort of get it then. But yeah, explaining it has always been a fun challenge as well to people.
And the cool thing about Moore that separated it from HQ, and HQ had a little bit of this, but in Moore trivia, you don't just have to know the answer. You have to know the answer fast. And that's one of the things that separates it from other games.
Yeah, because with QuizKit as well, we spent a lot of time working through, you know, how do we reward people for knowing the correct answer quicker rather than just sort of tapping. So you give people 10 seconds, you know, they have 10 seconds to Google or ask ChatGPT. Whereas, yeah, on Moore now, you know, if you know the right answer and you know it, you know, a reasonably skilled player can tap in, you know, under half a second, maybe under like a quarter of a second, since you know it's going to come through, which means that, yeah, you get rewarded for like knowing and like tapping quickly rather than, be able to wait 10 seconds or Google quickly.
Sometimes you can get rewarded just for being lucky.
Yes. Yeah. The three answers as well.
Yeah. If you don't know the answer, you just blindly guess and hope you're right.
Yeah.
There's not just trivia though. There's other games. You want to tell everybody some of the other games that are available.
So yeah, one of the big things as well we like is like bring people on as a guest. So we've got a feature where anyone through their phone can come right into the show and be part of it, which we quite like. One of the other ones we do is like Hot Seat, where it's sort of like Family Feud, Family Fortunes a bit, where we ask the person the hot seat a question. So it would be like Burger King or McDonald's. And we'll ask the audience the question at the same time, and they have to guess what they think most of the audience are going to get. And it's quite fun because you can ask like deeply philosophical questions, like, would you rather be rich and lonely or poor and popular and things like that, which are quite fun. Just the idea of like bringing people up on camera from their homes and you've got like 100 people in there, like it's so random. Like all the time, like we get people like driving, you have to like pull over, or like someone won't speak English or like really understand what you're saying, or like
they have terrible connections.
Yes, I love those kind of shows because they just bring out the unpredictability of live, which I think is what makes live like much more exciting than like on demand, because you don't know what's going to happen. Like, I don't know, people cut. We don't have, we have some like filters. We don't really have any like delay either. So like if something happens, you have to disconnect. We haven't had any major incidents actually yet. Touch wood. And we also do More or Less, which is our sort of take on Deal or No Deal. Rather than having, we wanted to make it interactive. So rather than having like a banker who decides how much you take after you select some boxes, we give the audience the banker role, and they're incentivized in the same way that the banker is to save money, because any money that doesn't go out is then split between the audience at the end when they answer like a 50-50 question. Because originally we put it in and like everyone would just give everyone the highest offer all the time because everyone was like friendly and nice. They didn't really give like an incentive to like choose the other amount. So we were like, this isn't working. So we rejigged it up by giving everyone the money at the end and giving like a nice incentive to like play strategically as well, which I think has worked well as well. That's another interesting one we do.
Have you guys had any problems with people trolling, people who shouldn't be there just trying to make a mess?
Cheating.
Yeah, trolling hasn't been that bad actually. I always find it kind of hilarious a bit with some of it. We never know. It's quite hard to get under the skin, I think. I remember like there's some people who would be like, you'd make a mistake and they'd be like, ah, of course you made another mistake. And just like, sort of kind of like sarcastically, I always find it kind of funny. We don't really have any bad trolling as such, I'd say. Cheating was like quite a big problem that we had where we basically sort of delayed our whole roadmap by about a month to like solve cheaters. And it's interesting with cheaters. I think with software, it's like, except when you build a safe, like you can build an uncrackable safe technically, but like given enough time and tools, you know, any safe is crackable. And the same with like software, like no matter what we put in, you know, there always will be people like working to sort of break it through. But yeah, we have people like get sort of into our back end to try to like find answers and like get perfect scores, which we started blocking through. We have You know, a lot of people use like OCR readers. So like, well, I think it's OCR, like optical character recognition. So they'll just take the image of the app, they'll take the questions, they then feed it into like ChatGPT, whatever, and then feed back a probability score for each answer. Like a lot of them, they'll look at it, they'll go to Bing, Google, whatever, and then just sort of look at the keywords to try and work out the answers. So trying to stop those is quite a challenge. And it's a mix of approaches we take. So now with the back end, we've got a lot of tools, which I don't want to explain too much how they work. Sort of see how people sure, use sure. the app. Yeah. We sort of see how people use the app. And from that, we can sort of tell who are like the bad actors or not, basically. Particularly if they're using any software or like multi-accounting and playing with multiple accounts and things as well.
Three answers, and it's random on everybody's different device. So like some person couldn't come in and say it's the top one because it's not the top one for everybody.
Yeah. We saw that on Discord where like people, they'd be like sharing answers. They'd be like 2, 3, 1, just trying to say it because the answers would be too long to type out. So we just, yeah, every device gets a different ordered answer. So you can't do that anymore. The other thing we do is the questions as well. So we take out all keywords of questions and use images and talking. Because you weren't sure about who you. So like rather than saying like when, who played Han Solo in Star Wars, we'd be like, we'd show a picture of like Han Solo and be like, who is this actor kind of thing. So we'd basically, so if you're Googling the quest, just the text and the question and the text, the answers, then you're not going to get a load of keywords taken back. And initially we were like, is this work? Will this be readable? Like, is it too awkward or complicated for people? But actually like humans, fine with it. Didn't really change it. No one really complained around it, which is good. But yeah, like being the bots, I'm kind of worried. ChatGPT still is quite slow. So I'm quite worried when it will be quicker and things. But yeah, right now, I think we're in a good place sort of right now, but we're sort of constantly sort of banning and putting in preventative measures where we can.
Are you looking? I'm looking at possibly making not ChatGPT, but using a program like ChatGPT that can detect when that's being used. Our school systems here are starting to use that same type of software to, you know, validate work that's done. I didn't know if there was a process that could be used since it is faster. It is knows what to look for. If it would be a tool as opposed to a hindrance.
I think we would, yeah. We definitely look to do that as well. For us, it is a very manual process. Like when I say, oh, we can see the activity, it's not like an algorithm flagging anything up. It's literally me or like someone else going into our thing, looking at the usage and being like, oh, okay, we can see this flag, and this is what's going on. And then we found them. But yeah, automation's good. The annoying thing I think I hate the most, and the thing that makes it more visible with more than it was HQ Trivia other apps, is that because we have those leaderboards at the end with like 1 to 20, like on HQ Trivia, it's like, oh, we got 100 winners. Here are their names. Like, doesn't matter who comes first, whatever. They're getting to this call. But with us, it is like, you know, there's ranks there and like positions. And it's really annoying when you get to like, you know, a point you get to the end of the leaderboard, the worst points, and that'd be like 15 cheaters or like the top 15 positions. And we're going to ban them all. But like, it just ruins it at the end. Trying to do like real-time checking, like during the shows and stuff, is like the best. There's like, we want to move towards eventually. Cause yeah, by showing the ranks at the end, it gives us like an extra pressure to solve it quickly as well.
Tell everybody how they can find the app and download it. And
yes. So the app's called Moar. So it's got M-O-A-R. We're on Google Play, we're on Android and iOS. If you search for M-O-A-R, you can find it there and download. And then, yeah, just check the schedule out, wait for a show to pop up. And you might see me or someone else hosting as well on there.
Cool. And just as long as you have a PayPal account, you can win actual money.
Yeah, we give out real money for all our game shows we do. We've just upped our prizes on our like daily shows as well. Which has been quite good. But yeah, if you got PayPal, we pay out to you each week, pay out every Monday. We've got like a £5 payment threshold, which I don't think is too hard to get to. And everything like translates to dollars.
Yeah, I'm not mad about the five pound threshold because that, having to send out 100 different people 2 cents take forever.
We did do it every day originally. I think we did it every week. We just sent out whatever people had to. But then, yeah, we saw the fees were like more than what we were paying out. I mean, like, this isn't sustainable. Yeah. How do you find the currency stuff, Jeff? Because you're based in the US, but everything we say is like British pounds and things. How do you find that as like an American player? Out of curiosity.
It's nice. It's always a little bit more than I was expecting because I don't know the conversion rate between pounds and dollars. So if I have like $5 coming and it ends up being $7 or $6.50 or something, that's always a little nice.
Well, Tim, thanks for coming on. I'm sure, you know, this is going to generate, at least with our viewing audience, going to generate some more people to the More platform and get Jeff together and get his little game going. And I'm sure he'd be happy to host one, and I'd be happy to play it.
I got two
Radio games. Labyrinth show.
I got two games loaded in my little setup thing, but I got to figure out how to actually get them going.
Okay.
Nice.
I'll sit down with Tim sometime though, and we'll talk it over and I'll figure it out.
All right, man. Well, I know it's late for you. It's midday for us, but you got to be heading towards closing for the day, I'm sure.
Well, yeah. Out of this, into bed, and then back up again. Luckily, we stopped on morning show now. I don't have another show in 8 hours tonight. So,
yeah, okay. That was one thing. They were doing an 8 a.m. UK show, which meant that it was 3 a.m. here.
Oh, that's why you were staying up at 3
a.m. I wasn't staying up. I was waking up at 2:59 a.m. to play the game.
I was amazed by how many people would wake up at 3 a.m. and play. And it's, you know, it's going to be like 100 or so people waking up there. It's like, it's mad, yeah. It's really painful for us a bit. Well, we if we had more hosts, I think we'd be fine. But like, yeah, we do our first show at 8 a.m. And then I then do an 8 p.m. show and then a 9 p.m. show. So we just work all day. So it ended up being like 15-hour days, which took its toll, especially when we're trying to do other things as well. So we cut back a bit around it. But yeah, we're looking to fill out the schedule as we keep going through.
I'm going to tell everybody to download the More app and get on there and play some trivia, play some other games. And share this with your friends if you watch this podcast or listen to it so everybody can check it out.
All right. We'll see you on the More platform.
Definitely, yeah. Be always on there. Thank you, guys.
Hi, it's Tim here from Radio Labyrinth. I'm going to read an ad, and I hope you enjoy it. I'd like to say thank you to Atlanta Pizza in Euro, our longtime sponsor, and thank you to Mike Hall and everyone at the restaurant. Summer is in full swing, and we have some local craft beers for you to enjoy. Terrapin Brewing's Watermelon Gosa is a tasty, refreshing sour ale that's a thirst-quenching delight served ice cold on draft. Sounds good, doesn't it? They've also added another tasty local brew, Creature Comforts Classic City Lager. Sounds tasty. That is also now available on draft. They also have Landshark Lager to round out their updated summer beer selection. And I expect we'll be getting a new slew of beers just in time for fall.
Pumpkin Spice City one.
Atlanta Pizza in Euro serves up the best freshly made Greek and Italian specialties around in an authentic retro dive pizza place with a come-as-you-are, family-friendly atmosphere. Now, come-as-you-are and family-friendly are the key things to figure out here, because come-as-you-are means one thing, family-friendly means another, but you put them together, they work perfectly. Dine-in and take-out available, limited delivery also available through Slice, DoorDash, Grubhub, and Uber Eats. If you're a business or corporate client who's looking to book a food truck for your next private event or catered luncheon, please contact Mike Hall at Atlanta Pizza in Euro by calling 770-483-6228. Okay, I don't even know where I'm looking here. Open for dine-in and takeout Monday through Friday, 11 to 9, Saturdays, 12 to 9, and closed on Sunday. Hey, do you have a commercial or residential construction printing need? Well, what are you waiting for? Contact LDI Repro Printing of Athens. They've been in Athens, Georgia since 2005 with fast turnaround and affordable prices. Call 706-316-9366 or email them at athens@ldiline.com.
Is views
last week was One Piece, which I watched all of. I loved it.
I watched the first episode with my son. Yeah, it's pretty cool. He was telling me all about it.
Now this thing has been around forever, and it's already been like a cartoon, and it's books and manga and all kinds of stuff.
Oh yeah, already.
And there's like thousands of them.
Yeah, it was a no brainer as far as for Netflix to pull this off as a series. Yeah,
and they did well. I watched the whole thing. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I can't wait to finish it up. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Disenchantment, which I've almost watched all of those.
I'm saving those.
Yeah.
But I can watch them all in one shot.
Wheel of Time. I watched the first one of season two, and God, was it boring.
Really?
I see why so many people quit in season one.
Yeah.
That's going to be a chore, but I guess I'll keep watching it. I did not enjoy this season two, episode one. This week, The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon starts on AMC.
Oh, is this his spinoff?
Yeah, this is the Daryl Dixon by himself show, and I think it's set in France or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How the hell did he make it to France?
Yeah, that's going to be like the overarching mystery of the thing. I think he wakes up in France and has no idea how he got there. They have to try and figure it out, like The Hangover or something.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'll watch it. I like Daryl. And I think it's probably only going to be six episodes or something for the first season, at least.
Yeah, I never got into the rest of it. So, yeah.
Welcome to Wrexham season two starts this week. Did you watch season one of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love season one. I thought it was really good. And I didn't realize season two was already up. That's great.
Yep, it's coming out this week.
Nice. Definitely views.
Yeah, that's a views for me. And The Morning Show comes back on Apple TV. Have you watched any of that?
No, I think I watched one episode when it first started, and I didn't really care for the format of it. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah, I've watched it all so far, so I guess I'll keep watching it, but it's not like something I look forward to watching.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things, if I only had Apple TV and didn't have any other streamers, then yeah, I would probably watch a lot more of their stuff.
I think that's what happened, like maybe during COVID or something, and I was like looking for something to watch. I had already watched all of Tiger King, and it's like, all right, I guess I'll go with this Morning Show and see what happens.
And Steph picks, I think.
Yeah, we're both picking the same thing.
Yeah. Holly, Stephen King's latest novel that just came out yesterday, I believe, on Tuesday. And we usually listen to the audiobooks, and this one's done by Justine Lupe. Lupe?
It's Loop. I thought it was Lupe too until I just listened to the book and heard her say her name.
They recite her name.
Justine Loop, yeah.
And she played Holly in the Mr. Mercedes series.
Yeah.
So I can't wait. I've listened to the introduction, and that was as far as I got before we had to jump on. But yeah, you know, this being, I guess, a continuation of both Mr. Mercedes and The Outsider and If It Bleeds.
Yeah.
Had a one in there. So Holly's been a character for Stephen King. From what I understand, he never intended for Holly to be anything more than a supporting character in the first Mr. Mercedes book, and just fell in love with the character. And I guess he sees a lot in her. And the more you read and see about her, you can fit a lot of character into that character.
Yeah.
With her issues of being on the spectrum and dealing with it, and then all the crazy Stephen King stuff that happens to her and everyone else in his universe.
Justine Loop did a better job playing Holly too than the other one on the Outsider.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's cool that she is reading it.
Yeah, that she played the character, and if. You know, if it comes around with, you know, Stephen King being as popular as he's been lately with TV and film, if Holly rolls around into a series or a movie, she definitely would be primed to pick the character back up again. But yeah, I can't wait to get into that.
If you watch or listen to this episode, share it on your social media pages, share it on your Twitter or share it on your Facebook, and try and get this more platform to blow up.
Yeah. With everything else we tell everybody to do, like, subscribe. Share it, review us. We just put out a bunch of reels and stuff on our TikTok page, trying to beef that up some. So give us some likes, some follows on all of our social media if you can, and we would really appreciate it. And next week is going to be regular show. Everybody should be back in town, and we can get back to the usual craziness that we have around here. But I figured at least, you know, we got a chance to talk to Tim from the More platform, be able to put out a show this week so you guys would keep the flow going. Remember, we do have Radio Labyrinth Presents, our interview series. Those are on our YouTube channel. So check those out. We put those out ever so often. We get a lot of good response from those. But yeah, I'd like for you guys to leave some comments. Let us know what you think about how the show's going and what we're doing. If you're a member of our Patreon, or if you're thinking about being a member of our Patreon, drop some ideas for us on what you'd like us to talk about and do. So I guess with that,
yeah.
See you next week. And remember to
keep it canon.